And it is Friday morning, Getaway Friday here, September the 10th, 2021, 20 minutes past the hour here. You're tuned into The Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. This show can be heard live every Friday morning at 11:10 a.m., repeated on Sunday morning at 8:10 a.m., and on Wednesday afternoon at 3:10 p.m. Now, don't forget, the Community Christian Fellowship Sunday service airs on this station, 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Also, you can check out the website for archive shows, wwgh1071.com, program archives, and the Pastor Spot is the first one under there, and then right under that are the Sunday services, so check that out. Now we turn to our host, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. Yourself?
Doing well.
Beautiful day out there today. I like these kind of some crisp late August or early September, actually, mornings. And I feel this fall coming on very quickly. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's been a quick summer, it seems like, but a good summer. We've got a lot of neat things going on at the church. Our coffee day that we do, where they serve coffee one morning a week outside, coffee and pastries for free, is really gone over well, and people stop. We've even got dog biscuits out there. But we've got a lot of work done at the church this year, and put a new roof on it, and mission house painted, and we're just wrapping up some other things, and kind of neat to see all those things happen and get done, and getting ready for. I start thinking when in this time of year, I always start thinking about, okay, what have I got to get wrapped up to carry it through the winter? And because I don't like to leave things kind of hanging outside once it gets, the weather starts turning, and we all start staying in a lot more than we did normally. But you know, there's a lot of neat things going on. Football season, it's football fall, you know, the boys of fall, it's always fun. And the cheerleaders and all that stuff that goes on with the stadiums and I happened to do prayer with the team. The team invited me to pray with them before the games at Elgin every Friday. And then I spend the evening on the sideline with them, encouraging them. And that's something I enjoy doing. I know that tonight we're going to, everyone's encouraged to wear patriotic attire because of the 9/11.
20 years.
20 years. And I want to talk a little bit about that today, if I could. Just kind of remembering some experiences from back then and how things have happened and gone on since. You know, it was a time when nobody was suspecting anything. You know, we had the USS Cole bombed, and we knew that was, you know, a terrorist thing, and it was going on. So we were kind of on edge about that a little bit. You know, what were we going to do about the coal, and how's that going to? Everyone was a little angry about that. What, we lost, I think, 100 and some service Navy men on that vessel. But I remember the morning of 9/11. I was driving to Kenton, and at the time I was still bivocational as a pastor. And I was delivering some, let's just say, genetic material to a farm in Kenton. And I was about halfway there, and I'm listening to the radio, and they broke in and said that this plane had hit the towers. And I thought, wow, that's horrible. You know, what's that all about? You know, how could that happen? You know, what a disaster. And then right as I was pulling into the farm that I was heading to, I remember that they said a second plane had hit the other tower. Well, at that moment, you know. And so I sat in my car listening before I went in, and I'm hearing all the things coming. And then, you know, they're talking about the Pentagon and the, you know, and immediately my mind goes to, how widespread is this attack? How bad is it? If, you know, is this stuff that's going to happen in every city, everywhere? How well planned has this thing been? And the first thing that actually came to my mind was, where are my children? Where is my wife? And are they going to be okay? And I didn't mean that in a physical sense, although that certainly could be a concern. My thought was, if we're separated, if something happens that we are separated from each other, do they have enough of what it takes? As I, as a father, taught them and been with my family enough for them to understand that God's going to take care of them, they're going to be okay, and are they strong enough to withstand what they might have to endure? And those were the thoughts that were racing through my mind at the time. And that always stuck out with me since then, because I think that that's a concern that was valid, and it was a concern that we all should kind of have. Have we done our job? Have we done our due diligence with our family, with our children, when difficult times come that are very, very bad? We always talk about bad times. I don't think that in America, I mean, COVID's not been fun for anyone, and a lot of people have died. It's been devastating for a lot. But in America, we have never witnessed the kind of widespread destruction, separation, loss of power, hunger, and things that have been experienced in other parts of the world and still happen today. And so people today can't really relate to that way of thinking. We see because you know the media is able to get around the world so easily, you know, we see the refugees and the people walking, and you know, yesterday I saw a thing for is it Child International or Child, you know, the kids that are starving in certain parts of Africa. And you see those kids, and we've not experienced that in the U.S.
No, we haven't, and it's interesting.
It is interesting, and I think so. People can't, to us, a disaster is when we don't have any money, or when there's a bad sickness going around, or the job market fails, or you can't get to the store, your electric goes out, and those are all bad things, don't get me wrong, no one wants them, but total devastation, fear of for your life for the next day. A lot of these people are living in fear for their life for the next day. We know what's going on in Afghanistan right now. There had been one thing that I fear for the women. There's been a lot of women put in political and leadership positions over the last 20 years, and now the Taliban has gone ahead and said, well, you're done with this. But not just are you done, what have they done with them, what are they doing to them? And we know that just by their record alone, the atrocities that they do, the atrocities that they do to that they will be doing and do to the Christians there. You know, for the first time, there has always been a small Jewish church that has existed in Iran for years and years and years and years. Not Iran, excuse me, in Afghanistan, and they've pulled out, and they're the church is gone, and they've left to go to other places. And you know, we know that it's difficult, but in this country, we haven't seen that, and I pray that we never do see that. But it doesn't mean that we don't prepare ourselves for what would we do if. And I don't mean it from a doomsday perspective. I mean it from a perspective of, are we prepared for tomorrow? And, you know, as a Christian, I believe there's the day that we will go home to be with the Lord. And are we prepared for that? Or are we, have we really ever sat down and thought about life and where it's heading? Or do we just stumble day to day and get through it?
Probably more the latter.
More the latter.
You know, when it comes to September 11th, because I tell this story, I try to tell this story every year, and I can't believe it's been 20 years now, but because I never really, I've never had a ghost experience, I've never had a white light experience, I've never had anything like that. The closest thing that ever happened to me was during September 11th, and this is exactly as it happened. You know, no reason to make it up. It wasn't on September 11th. September 11th, I was in college, and we were still on the quarter system, so I did not go back to college till like September 20th, something like that. So September 11th had happened, and you know, it had been covered by the news, and there were a lot of visuals around, and all this happened. So it was time to go back to school, and it was the first day of classes of college. And I remember I walked into the building the first day, and I go upstairs because my class was at the end of a hall upstairs. So I go upstairs, and I'm going down the hall, and I remember thinking, it's very odd there's nobody in this hall. because it was the middle of the day, probably 12:30, 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. School was back in full force, and there was I don't remember seeing a soul in the hall. And there were always people sitting in the hallway doing their homework or talking to other people, mm-hmm. whatever. Nobody. So I remember I walked down to the classroom that I was supposed to go in, and I just opened the door, and I noticed that there were a group of kids and an adult, and they were, I think they were praying. But to be honest with you, I don't know, because I felt like I was intruding on what they were doing, so I just shut the door, and I started back from where I'd come from. And then I got back to almost the door, and I thought, well, you know, I'll just wait till they're done, and then I'll go in. So I walked back. Now, this couldn't have taken more than 60 seconds to walk from the door. They were gone. The room was dark. I never saw anybody pass me in the hall that had come out of that room. To this day, I don't know what that was.
Scott, I got to ask you a question. Yeah. Did you get goosebumps?
Oh, it was weird. Very strange. And to this day, even thinking about that, because I know it happened. I was there. I was fully awake.
Like 60 seconds.
It couldn't have been any longer than that. Now, it's possible that they could have just gotten out of there quick.
That would have been real quick.
That had been real quick. But the light was off.
But where did they go? You said you never passed them in the hall.
I don't, unless they went, I really don't know. I don't remember seeing anybody in the hall, period. That's odd to me. I mean, but class went on. I went into the room because the light was out. I got in a desk. The rest of the class eventually showed up. We started on time. It was like nothing had ever happened. But I still don't know what that was.
Wow.
Very weird.
Very different. Very different. I don't think I've had anything like that happen before.
No, and to this day, fully awake. It wasn't even it didn't even seem like a dream. It was just...
something that happened.
It happened.
Well, it happened, and I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
But those kind of things, odd things happen. But it does make you think, and a lot of things, you know, kick us into gear on thinking. One thing that I think that the church really missed an opportunity to help more people and to build more lives. Immediately after 9/11, people were flocking to churches. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the churches were full.
Sunday after was tremendous attendance.
Tremendous attendance. And I think that a lot of church leaders just got excited at the people coming in the door and didn't realize that there was something they were supposed to do with those people that came in the door. In other words, they were supposed to begin a process of helping them with their lives and guiding them to faith and keeping them so they would have a lifelong commitment to God and to the church and to their lives and God bettering their lives through God. And I think they were so excited they just thought they were going to stay. And they didn't.
You know what's interesting about that? A lot of the church services, because a lot of them were covered that day, and a lot of the pastors, ministers, priests were very... and at the time, it's what people wanted to hear. It really was. But they were very forceful. You know, we're going to get them. It's going to be...
Really?
Yeah, I remember seeing a lot.
I don't remember that.
We're going to be okay. We're going to deal with this.
Yeah, in that way I might have heard it, but I don't think I heard a lot of revenge coming from pulpits.
Revenge-type talk. I think people wanted to pop people at that time, and whether it was meant,
but
it came across...
That would be an immediate reaction for most people in seeing...
Right.
You know, I was... I watched a special the other night on 9/11, and they're interviewing a lady. She was the last person taken out alive. And she was taken out 27 hours after they collapsed, and she was down a couple of floors, buried under concrete, couldn't move, and they got her out, and she's fine. And she had resigned herself to the fact they weren't going to get to her. She could hear people, but you know, she was. But anyway, she was the last person out, and you know, just the description of so much going on, and all the people that were just so brutally killed in a very short period of time for no reason, for honestly for no good reason. And All the emergency responders that, hey, if you don't have respect for emergency responders, remember that day, because they ran into danger. I mean, without any hesitation. And that's what happens. That's what emergency responders do. And I think to see that devastation and to see the pain on people's faces and the tears and the fear and the yelling and the I think that it angers a lot of people.
Well, but the opposite side was there were preachers and pastors that day who I also heard on the other side, and I think they probably did do a better job of keeping those people in church. Who I remember one, this sticks with me 20 years later, saying, as of this past Tuesday, because it happened on a Tuesday, as of this past Tuesday, Normal has a new address. Yes, and I thought that was a very prophetic statement.
A friend of mine, Keith Campbell, Keith's gone on to be with the Lord now. He had a heart attack at a very young age. I think he was like 40. But he was a captain of the Salvation Army, and he was captain in New York City. And he was the captain on duty with Salvation Army at Ground Zero for months after that. He and his wife Carmen and served there. And of course, they ended up having the Delaware post in Delaware, Ohio, later on after that. And that's how I got to know him. But you know, it was very life-changing for him to see, you know, what it means to lose everything. And if we ever had an example in this country of what other countries see, that was probably it. But so many of us, them see it so often and so constantly. You know, the Middle East has been fighting forever. That's what they do. They fight, and one rises, they kill them off, and another one comes in, and it's just always been a very unstable place. And we don't see that here. I mean, we remember through our history growing up, like things going on in Kosovo and in North Africa and all the genocide and Rwanda and all those things. These people live with that life from the time they're young till they're older. And what a difficult... We are so blessed to be Americans, and I wish we could realize that. I wish people could really grasp that, because I get so tired of hearing people trashing America and Americans trashing America. Do we do everything perfect? Of course not. We're people. People don't do things right all the time. People can be very selfish. They can have different ambitions, and some of them aren't honorable, and some are. But the point is, we are the greatest example of freedom in the world. We're the greatest example of philanthropy in the world, of giving to others in need. We're the greatest example of honesty, racial diversity. We have so much diversity in this country. And because of a few bad apples, everyone seems to want to get tarred with the same brush. I don't have a racist bone in my body. I don't, and I know you don't, Scott. I don't believe, I know you well enough to know that you don't. And I think that most of us are that way. But unfortunately, a lot of what goes on today, we all get tarred with that because of our skin color, or where we were born, or where we live, or the fact that we may have had two parents, or whatever the case may be. And I don't think that any of us should ever feel guilty for who we are or where we came from. We just need to do the very best with what we're given and where we are, and make the best of the situation that we're in.
You know what I've learned over the years, though, is I'm not even sure the person, and I think most people who see atrocities created toward them. If I sat down right now with a person who I knew was racist, absolutely knew it, and let's say they're self-professed, they will tell you. They call it white nationalism now, but they'll tell you. They believe some things are wrong. If I sat down with one of them, I really don't think that they're the problem, because I know what they are. They've told me. I know exactly what I'm looking at. It's the person who hears that or sees that and then tries to tar and feather me because I'm a part of that, that I'm asking them questions, that I must also be that way too. I always believe the third party that tries to guilty by association. I don't like that. I think that's where we get into big trouble.
Yeah, I think so too. I guilt by association can be a bad thing. It can be an honest thing sometimes. Sometimes if you choose, now if you chose to associate with those kind of people all the time, that would be guilt by association that was deserved.
Well,
but if you're doing it as an interviewer or to bring their thoughts out or bring dialogue to something, you can't be held accountable for that. You're doing what you're supposed to do.
But you know, people don't see that. People believe that if you let somebody on who's, they feel this way about most anything, not just racism, if you get an opinion that is not their opinion on the airwaves, you are promoting something bad.
Yes, but one time or so, one place that I think sometimes an interviewer, a station host, a show host, whatever, can get in trouble with is if every one of their guests are always fit one category. Then I think it's almost fair to say that they must like that category.
Well, I've had this conversation many times recently. Amos and Andy. Amos and Andy was the, if not the most popular, one of the most popular radio shows in television, or radio history.
My mom loved it.
Absolutely. And in that day, a lot of people loved it. It was huge. But today, I would not air it. Now, there are a lot of copies of that left because it was so popular, and we tend to keep copies of things that are very popular. I wouldn't air it because now I know that two white guys are doing the voices. They're speaking that way because they thought that was a black dialect, which it sounds ridiculous when you listen to it today. Funny then, because it's a different time. But stations that do air that today, and there are some, I do question that. That to me is one of those guilt, because I think, now why are you doing that? Anybody can get that on the internet. If this is some psychological experiment that you want to hear Amos in, or are you doing that to appeal to that audience, because there is so much innuendo in that show.
Yeah, and it's I agree. I know what you're saying, I agree with what you're saying. I think that we have to be careful. I think that when, you know, I was talking about racism a minute ago, and you know, you immediately went to talking to someone that you know was racist and how they felt referring to a white person. We have to understand there's sort of racism on both sides of the coin. And sometimes if I'm talking about a racist, I may be talking about somebody that's black or Hispanic that's a racist. And we have to keep that in mind too. Racism doesn't come in a color.
Oh, but the thing of it is that a lot of people will jump up and they'll say, do you want to get rid of Gone with the Wind because Hattie McDaniel was the maid? Well, no, because Hattie McDaniel chose to take that part. It was the best she could get at that. She won an Oscar, by the way, for it.
What about the craziness about Aunt Jemima?
That's an interesting
crazy
thing,
that,
too.
That woman loved what she did.
She toured the country,
she
made a lot of money.
She toured the country and her family loved it. And then to take that away and say that somehow that she was... I mean, for crying out loud, they've taken down landmarks that they don't understand what they are. And, I mean, some landmarks, I'm not going to argue about. Some, prominent black people have even had there.
You know the interesting one to me?
I don't understand.
Maybe it's,
lack of knowledge, for one.
Well, the comparison of Amos and Andy to Gone with the Wind, or even Jack Benny's show, because, you know, he had Rochester, but Rochester was an African-American actor. It wasn't, the difference is Amos and Andy was not. They were doing imitations. It's like blackface to me.
It was so popular back then.
Yeah, but that's and then it was a different time. But
you know, if I'll be honest with you, if you know, even today when you watch a lot of stand up comedy, and you watch a lot of black stand up comedy, they imitate white people and make fun of the honky and on and on. It's the same thing. We need to decide whether stuff is going to be acceptable or not acceptable. And I think that we all need to either accept a certain amount of joshing and kidding and playing off each other, or we need to just stop it altogether on everywhere. I don't think that it can be one-sided all the time.
Well, it's interesting to me because I don't know. A lot of times, If you have to question it in your head before you say it, then I think you probably shouldn't say it.
Probably should not say it.
Yeah. If you think, well, how's this going to come
across? If you know that it's going to get a huge laugh from some people that are not in a good place, maybe you shouldn't say it either.
But, you know, the Jewish people have faced this.
Forever.
And it's, you know, how we got the Anti-Defamation League. But also, I don't really understand why it's so hard for us to let go of stuff like that. Nobody's trying to take your past away. I mean, it's your memory.
It's your memory, and why did they just leave it alone? It's part of history. It is what it is. And, I mean, you have to understand what it is. You know, there were so many things that went on with blacks and whites in the South that went far deeper than the war. And they went far deeper than slavery. There were actually, believe it or not, and I think the best thing we ever did was abolish slavery. I mean, that was a wonderful thing, that it shouldn't have been there in the first place. But what I'm saying is some of those lives had a lot more. Every time we talk about the South and every time we talk about blacks in the South, it always comes back to that. And even though it was the most paramount thing of the time, I'm sure, there was so much of it that was good. I was talking to a friend of mine, Stephen, that his great-grandfather had a rather large farm and had blacks there working for him, and he was they're part of the South. And he told me how much he loved them, and his and they were just part of the family. And when the Civil War was over, how they stayed, and they stayed for generations, and just part of the family. You know, took the family name, everything. And there was so much of that good that went on. There was so much people, you know, learning to read and write and having church families. And I see some pictures. I'm on a website that brings up a lot of historical photos. And I saw one recently of a plantation where there were a lot of slave housing. And quite frankly, the housing was far better than the stuff in Appalachia at the same period of time. And the people were standing outside for their Sunday picture. And they were all had, the children even had beautiful dresses on. And the people were dressed well. Now, does that make slavery somehow right? Am I trying to justify that? Of course not. But what I'm saying is the fact that these people still had lives that in their mind, there were some good things in their lives. Don't paint my entire life because I was a slave. I was also a father. I was also a brother. I was also a friend. You understand what I mean?
Well, you know, the thing that sticks with me is, and it's because I've been doing a lot of research lately on John Adams, because I think he gets left out. It's very strange to me how the first three presidents, we revere George Washington because of really the Revolutionary War.
Right, right.
We revere Thomas Jefferson really because of the Declaration of Independence. And here's John Adams sandwiched in between them. And he didn't leave the army. He didn't write the Declaration of Independence. But he is the one. Washington didn't want to be the general. He told him he didn't want to do it. He didn't think he was good enough to do it. Adams was the lead person who said, you need to do this. They asked Adams to write the Declaration of Independence. He said, no, Thomas Jefferson is the one who should do this. But the point I'm making in regard to racism, of the first 10 presidents, the only one who did not own slaves was John Adams. And John Adams said in his writings, and people can find this, Thomas Jefferson clearly owned slaves and had relationships with them.
And George Washington clearly had slaves. Absolutely. And, I might add, treated them very well, educated them, and was not... there's a whole lot to that story.
But there's because people act as if in that time they didn't know that this was a bad thing. John Adams wrote...
They knew it was bad.
Well, John Adams... And I think he's the... John Adams wrote, and this is a paraphrase, but you can find it. He said, I hire workers when I need help. And until slaves are freed, I will not totally consider this country to be independent.
Amen.
He knew.
I don't believe that, you know, we knew that we weren't going to get our Constitution ratified if we didn't go along with Virginia. And the point is, there were a lot of people in the founding of this country that did not want this to be a slave nation. And I think one of the things we forget about, too, is the fact that is the people that were brought over on the boats were already slaves. They were that. What I mean by that is they had been sold into slavery before they ever got off the boat. They didn't become slaves the day they were on the auction block. And it was their own people, unfortunately, that brought them. You didn't have slave ship people and traders going out into Africa and finding people and dragging them there. They were there, and they were being sold. And the whole process was sickening. It was sad. It was total abuse of the worst kind, physical abuse, mental abuse, torture abuse. The slave ships were, if you've ever read about the conditions of a slave ship, it was one of the most disgusting things in the world. Matter of fact, they couldn't even leave them in the harbor because they smelled so bad. They had to pull them out and anchor them out. But the point is that a lot of those people that came from there came from a very bad situation, and there were actually those in this country that gave them better lives than they had beforehand.
You know what? I'll tell you where the problem. You know where the problem in this lies? It's not because Adam's clearly got it as we've went through. You know, it's and I hate to say it because it's 45 minutes down the road. Christopher Columbus, it to me is the classic example right now of what we really face. We're in a pickle in this one because Christopher Columbus pretty much made up his life. He really did. I mean, I'm sorry he did, but we took it as the gospel for a long time, and it was pretty much all a lie.
There's a lot of that goes on today in politics.
It is, but he got a holiday, he got statues, he got towns and cities named after him, and the truth of the matter is now we're looking at it and going, oh man, he was really kind of an awful guy. And it wasn't just in racism. He was pretty awful to just about everybody. And especially the Native Americans are indigenous people, however you want to refer to that whole problem. But that it's that type of person. It's the Columbuses that, but again, people are holding on to him as this, they can't, Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. We can't let go of it. And that's the problem. What you're saying is history. It's the truth. Columbus isn't the truth.
No.
And we got to let go of that.
What about the fact that it was the people of color in the Caribbean? Excuse me. I'm going to sneeze.
You're listening to the Pastor Spot here on WWGH Radio. You know what? This is going to be, I think, a fair call. We'll try to fit it in. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott, are you there till how long today?
I'll be here till 1.
Till 1, okay.
Yep.
I'm going to bring you a couple of tomatoes.
Oh, thank you.
The other guy called in earlier. The three things you need for tomatoes if you want to use fertilizer is nitrogen, potash, and potassium.
Well, thank you. I'm going to bring some tomatoes later on.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's nice. I'll take that.
Is the people of color that actually were as much or more involved in the slave trade than anyone. Rarely did they come directly to the United States. They went there and then were brought here. But today, because they are the same color as the people they were brought in, even though they weren't African Americans, they are held up as being black in the same way. So we make those mistakes all the time in history. And I think that, once again, we associate people by skin color. We associate people by and we shouldn't do that. I mean, I wish that it wasn't constantly being made to be such an issue, because I know that in so many areas it's not an issue. I was having this discussion with a business person in Richwood one day, and we were talking about, they said, one of the things that disturbs them, says, is when people tell, because I grew up in a rural, small country town, and I'm white, that I'm somehow a racist. He said, the problem is, he said, I have no reason to be a racist, one way or the other. He said, I didn't know any black people growing up, and to me, they're just people like me, but there aren't any here. And he said, I never had any opportunity to be a racist, and he said, if I had that opportunity, I wouldn't have been. So why are you are people referring to me and to our people that live like I do as these kind of people? And it's very unfair. I think that we have to, you know, one thing that you know who was the least racist person there probably ever existed was Jesus Christ. And the fact is that God created all of us. He created all of us equal in His design for us. We can't somehow think we're superior because we're black, or superior because we're white, or because we're Asian, or because we're Indian, or because whatever the case is. We got to get past that somehow. But we've also got to quit using it as a rallying cry for what we think was unfair or is unfair. Look, if you dwell your entire life on everything being unfair, you're going to live an unfair life. And I'm reading a book right now, and I'm sorry about book titles, I'm bad, but I love this one. And it's kind of, to summarize it, it is, you are what you think. And where our mind is and what we think about has a direct result on who we are and what we think, day in and day out. If I think all the time negative thoughts, I'm going to live a negative life. If I think that, I'll give you a good example. A girl goes on a date, and a date just goes horrible. And she goes on another date, it just goes horrible. And she starts thinking, no one is ever going to, I'm not good enough for anyone, you know, and I don't know if I should go on another date because it's just going to be horrible and I'm not going to have anyone and blah, blah, blah. And they get thinking about that all the time. Guess what? They're not going to. And it's the same thing if you feel defeated and you think defeated, you're going to be defeated. And I think that we have to somehow get past this and decide that we are going to be who God created us to be, which is a wonderful individual that has all the opportunities in the world, and go out and find them. And I don't care what people of every color, of every race, of every creed, of every nation have rose up and defeated what was bad in life because of that.
Well, I think that's probably true. I think, you know, when it comes to the whole thing, people are going to believe what they're going to believe, and people are going to do what they're going to do. But, you know, you do know any type of whatever people want to call it, if it's racism, if it's religious discrimination, you do know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And it comes across, you can't go to, you know, Richwood or LaRue and say, oh, well, they're just all racist because they're rural communities. But you can be in Marion, Ohio or New York City, and you know it when you see it. And, you know, it exists.
Sure it does.
But I just think we've got to be able to know it when it exists. And usually it's very surprising when you realize what's going on. I mean, I had somebody tell, I'm going to make it very quick, but I had somebody who I had known for 25 years, one day turned to me, and we were coming back from Cedar Point, and he was a construction person. And he turned to me and just flat out said, I would never hire a black person. I don't know what you're saying. And he said, well, because if you fire them, they'll sue you for discrimination. Now, to me, I never looked at that person the same again, because that was such flawed logic. Now, did they go out and burn crosses and wear sheets? No.
And I think that in that case, you know, those cases happen. But what if they sue you for? What if they're white and sue you for sexual discrimination or for anything else? I you know, people take a lot of things. They do take a lot of things, I think, to extremes. And look, the bottom line is, if we care about our neighbor more than ourselves, like the Bible tells us to. And we do, and we try to do what's right, and treat everyone decently, these problems go away. And I don't think that we can live our lives as if, you know, poor Steve, you know, I'm not very tall, and it's affected me my whole life. No one's given me the credibility I should have because I'm not 6'4 and handsome. You know, wow, what a defeated life that would be. Or I grew up, we didn't have anything, and because of that, I missed opportunities. Woe is me. Can't do that, Scott.
You know what I've always thought? Talent does not have a color or a gender.
No.
And I want to be around talented. I want to be around people who can play ball better than I can. And that's a metaphor. I mean, whatever I'm doing. I want to be around people who are better than me because they will bring my game up.
Yeah. If they're wanting to be around me, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, I've never known, I, you know, it sounds cliche when you say, well, I've never looked at a color or a gender. Well, of course you see it when it comes at you. You know, if somebody said, well, what race, religion, you know, for the most part, what gender that person is, I know. But did I think about that in making the decision to be around them? Well, no, I made that decision because of what they said and what they brought to the table.
You know, it's funny, you know, football is a good example. Everyone's wearing a uniform. Most of the guys out there are black. And all these rednecks drinking beer on their couch are rooting for all these black guys every Sunday and talking about how great they are. Where's the racism in that?
Well, you know, a quick story here, because Thunderbolt Patterson's been here many times, and this is absolutely true, and he's one of the few that's left around to say it, because he was a huge star in the 50s and 60s. But he was a big star in the South, in Atlanta, in the Omni. He would go to the Omni, he and Bobo Brazil, which that was a huge name around
yep,
here,
sure
well,
was.
They would go and main event the show at the Omni and fill the place. 60,000 people, they'd be in the main event, and they'd be cheering for him because they were the good guys.
Yeah.
They left that arena and couldn't stay in the hotel that the fan owned.
That was just stupid.
Now, does that make any sense at all?
No, it's stupid.
But that's what happened in those days. You couldn't go to the restaurant. The person who bought paid $30 for a front row seat to see those men and ask for their autograph wouldn't sit next to them in a restaurant. That is so convoluted.
That's a mental thing that is just out, way out there.
Which I think is why, in a way, we still have the... Because that some of that generation is still alive that dealt with that.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, see, I didn't grow up with that.
Right.
My parents, although they... A lot of the slang and language may have sounded racist, were not. I mean... They would never have any problem eating dinner with a black person. You know, it's really amazing you think about that. The very people that wouldn't sit next to a black person in a restaurant, okay, because what, they're too dirty? I don't know. Would let them cook their food in the kitchen.
Oh, preferred it.
Preferred it.
Yeah.
Explain that one to me.
It doesn't make any sense. It's certainly not. Not only is it not logical, it's not economically smart.
No.
And there we go.
Brilliant. It's been a good show.
It has been a good show.
Enjoyed today.
Yeah, that day was fun.
Enjoyed today. Well, God bless you guys. Have a great week.
Io, address 209 East Water Street. The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address.